Morning. Today's daf in Nida is Mem Gimel. We are today on the back end of Mem Beis Amud Beis. We are starting about halfway down in the Amud. The issues of Tum and Tahara, the fifth parak of the Masechta. So we are discussing. Okay. So at the end, give me a name and we'll say Kaddish. So the. Okay, so the we are discussing the issues of Tum and Tahara, and the questions we've been dealing with are very specific questions regarding Tum and Tahara of Nida, Zava, Yoledis. This is the Masechta to discuss it, and yesterday we finished off the discussion of the Prozdar. Is the Prozdar considered a Tum of Blue, or is it considered, is it a Makom Blue, or is it a Makom Beis Astarim? They're very similar to one another, but there are subtle differences between them in halachic nafkaminas. And the area of balu is an area that's totally absorbed and totally recessed within the body. It's totally insulated. And so therefore, if it's something which is balua, so that means it makes it totally impervious to tumah. So, for example, like we said yesterday, the rachmanis of a woman is carrying inside of her a mace. The baby rachmanis died inside of her. And so now the baby obviously is a mace, it's an avatum, it's metame, b'maga, b'masa, uva ohel. And meanwhile, because it's balua, because it's totally absorbed inside of her, and it's totally insulated within her, so the tumma does not exit her body. And it would be true in both directions, by the way. In other words, the tumma wouldn't exit her body, and if something tahor was absorbed inside of her, so then it becomes impervious to accepting the tumma. So this is the concept of balua. What about beis astarim? Beis astarim is like 1 degree less. Beis Astarim means it's like a fold in your body, it's a crease in your body, it no longer becomes an external area, and therefore is not subject to Tumas Maga. However, if it's something which is Beis Astarim, it is eligible, susceptible to Masa, and so that means to say that if you're, let's say, holding something within a crease in your body, and it is going to be an Avatumah, but nevertheless, it's not going to be Metame B'maga. So it won't be able to, while it's recessed within the fold, within the Beis Astarim, so the Maga transmission will not be transmitted. Masha Ein Kein, as far as Masa is concerned, if you end up carrying the item, even though it is in a fold, the tumma will be transmitted through Masa. Yesterday, the Gemara came up with an Ukimta, a very strange one, but still, it makes the point. So let's say there's a Nevela that was inserted into the Prozdor of a woman, and obviously somebody else inserted it, otherwise she would be touching it, she'd be Tame. So the Nevela is inserted into the Prozdor. So once again, the scenario now, the nafkamina plays out. If it's considered a balua area, so then it becomes totally impervious to tumma. Na maga na masa. But if it's viewed as a beis astarim, so it's not going to be metamir through maga, but it will be metamir through masa. That is the subtle difference between a balua versus beis astarim as far as the prozdor is concerned. So which one is it? So the Gemara discussed it yesterday, and the Gemara arrived at the conclusion that it's a beis astarim. Actually, it's a machlokis between Abai and Rava.
Can you have masa without maga?
Yeah. Right. I mean, that was...
How can you have masa? I mean, carrying it...
In other words, it's in a beis astarim.
If I carry something on top of its shell, let's say, and I pick up the shell, is that...
That's masa, it's not maga. Correct.
Oh, okay.
Correct. So the Gemara actually to machlokes between Abai and Rava, but the halach is that it's viewed as a beis astarim. Okay, that is what we saw yesterday. Okay, Abai did defend his position, but anyway, but the halacha is like Rava, that's considered a beis astarim. Ibai lehu makom, we are picking up right where we left off yesterday on Membeis. It's about 2/3 of the way down in the Amud. It's the last word in the line is Ibai. Ibai lehu, the Gemara asks the following question. Makom, nivlas of tahor balua have, o beis astarim have. So as far as the area where nivlas of tahor, we touched on yesterday, we get to review today. When a person ingests a kezias of the carcass of a kosher bird that was not shechted, okay? In much shorter words, a nivlas of tahor. Mm-hmm. So under those circumstances, so we know the person becomes tame. Now it has to go into your throat. In other words, you have to put it in your mouth and it has to go into your throat, and then you become tame. And it's really unusual, and the Gemara makes this point numerous times, that the nevela of an of tahor is not metame b'maga, not b'masa. It's only metame in this unusual form of ingestion. And so therefore, the Gemara wants to know, is the area, the makom nivlas of tahor, meaning your throat, is that considered a balua area or a beis astarim area? Now the Gemara says, okay, wonderful question. I'll say it bluntly, who cares? meaning l'may nafkamina. So kigon shetachav lo chaver or kizayis nevela l'soch piv. So the Gemara says, let's say you're not the one who put the nivlas of tar in your mouth, but somebody else did. So if we're saying that the area is a tumah balua, so then that doesn't transmit tumah, as we already pointed out. Balua means total insulation from tumah. And iamart beis hasarim have. So the Gemara says it's the beis hasarim nihinam de memagal amitame vemasa miyamitamya. So the Gemara says, okay, so look, you're not touching the nevela, but you're carrying it. So the Gemara now wants to know that the throat area, is that considered a balua area? Is that considered a beis hasarim area? And again, the nafkamina is the same nafkamina. If it's balua, totally impervious to tumah. If it is beis hasarim, so then only impervious to maga, but not to masa. Okay. Sorry, if I wasn't clear about this, the nevela that was inserted into your mouth was a regular nevela. It was stam nevela. Abaye amar balua hava rava amar beis hasarim hava. And again, machlokes between Abaye and Rava. And they are each taking the same position they took yesterday. Helps us remember. So Amar Abai Menami no detanya. So Abai says, look, I'm right. That the area of the throat is considered a balua area because consider the following brisa. Now, the brisa is going to teach us the following. This halacha of the nevelas of tahor is limited to just the nevela of an oath. And it doesn't extend to any other type of nevela. I might have thought otherwise. And the brisa is going to say, but no. That's the brisa. And now we're going to see it inside. And you'll see that this brisa, as we go through the subtleties of its arguments, is going to sound like a bayi. I might have thought that the nevela that is consumed, that's ingested, is not only metame when you're doing so of a nevelas oaf, but also even if it's nevelas behema as well. And tamalama nevela v'cherfa lo yochal l'tama ba. Misha ein lo tuma ela achilasa yatzazeh shetame. So the Gemara says that the special halacha of nivlas of tahor is only referring to the type of animal that has no other type of tumah. A bird, the carcass of a bird, is not metame b'magat, it's not metame b'masa. However, it doesn't apply to an animal because that is metame both b'maga and masa. So the Gemara says, okay, but what about a kavachomer? If the nevela of a bird which has limited tumah and it's only metame bifnim, and yet it will be metame when you ingest it, the nevela of an animal which is already metame bechutz certainly should already be metame bifnim. That's the argument. So I'm a krabba, bavlo b'acheres. So the Gemara says no, because we have a drasha. I mean, the kavachomer would have been good, but we have a drasha, and the drasha tells us that the ingestion of the nevela is only limited to that of a bird. So the Gemara says, okay, so why does the Torah say the word va'ochel? The only reason why by nevela of an animal the Torah uses the word ochel is just to get us to a shear, the requisite amount in order for tumah to be transmitted. How much nevela do you need? Kezayis. How do I know that? Because the Torah says ochel, and we know the shear of achila is a kezayis. Okay, anyway, what comes out from all this is that it sounds like from the brisa that the area of the throat is considered an area that is balua. That's what it sounds like from the brisa, and it certainly would be supportive of Abai's position. Again, the Gemara doesn't go back and forth over here between Abai and Rava in terms of what Rava would respond. Okay, the Gemara goes on from here. Okay, Amar Rava. We are now going to go over more halachas as it relates to beis hasarim and tumah. Again, beis hasarim is basically a folded area in your body. So it's not an internal area of your body. It's not the uterus of a woman. Again, we just went over in the Gemara, the prosdor of a woman, the throat of both men and women. Is that a balua area? Is that just a beis hasarim area? On both of those, the Gemara's conclusion, Rava's conclusion, is that it's a beis hasarim area. So we pretty much have it down. We know for sure that if, let's say, your armpit, that's a beis hasarim area, meaning it's a folded area and it's not external, it's considered beis hasarim. Okay, so these are basically what we have now concluded in terms of what is defined as balua versus beis hasarim. Gemara has the following discussion, or not even much of a discussion. Amar Rava, sheretz bekumto tahor, nevela bekumto tameh. Okay, so All we're doing now is taking everything we learned and just putting it into application. If, let's say, a sheretz is located in the fold of your body, so you're holding a sheretz in an armpit. Okay, it's pretty disgusting, but once we're past that, the only question is, are you tummy? So again, here's what we know. A sheretz was metame b'maga, and only b'maga. So that means to say now that it came into contact with you. That's for sure, but it's in now in your base of sarim. The base of sarim is not considered an external portion of your body. Therefore, you're tahor. On the other hand, if the nevela is bekumto, let's say the nevela is in your armpit. So a piece of nevela is in your armpit, and you are going to be tummy. Why? Because the nevela is metame b'maga uvimasa. So although as far as maga is concerned, this doesn't qualify as maga, but nevertheless, you're carrying it. And as far as carrying is concerned, even carrying in a base of starim is considered carrying, and therefore your tummy. Very straightforward. Sheretz bekumto, taru sheretz benegiyahu, de metame, u base of starim lav bar magahu. The Gemara just simply spells out what we just said. And nevela bekumto tame, nehid de memagala metame, bemasa mea metame. Okay. The Gemara continues, sheretz bekumto vihichnisu la'avir hatanur. Let's say the sheretz now is in a base of starim. And now what you did is you put the sheretz and you that was in the base of starim and then took it and moved it into a tanur. Okay, this tanur is very large because it's going to be able to fit you. Okay, so, okay, very fine. In other words, we're just dealing more with the abstract conceptualization of the halacha. So you have the tumam, the sheretz, in your base of starim. It's in your armpit. And now you, with the sheretz in your armpit, are going into an oven, an earthenware oven. Now, what do we know regarding an earthenware oven? It's metame be'aviro. All I need is the sheretz to be in the airspace, in the interior airspace of an oven, and now the entire interior airspace of the oven, and of course the kli cheres itself is now tame. The only variable over here is that currently, right now, the sheretz is encased in my base of starim. So now we know it's not balua, meaning because if it was balua, that would be a total insulation. It's only the base of starim. Is the base of starim now going to prevent that tumah of being considered now in the airspace of the earthenware oven? So the Gemara, once again, very clear. Sheretz bekumto v'yichnisu l'avir tanur tameh. So the Gemara says that the oven now is going to be tameh. It is viewed as if the sheretz is in the interior airspace of the oven, even though right now currently it's encased within the person's base of starim. Now the Gemara pshita, the Gemara starts off by saying, I think that point is obvious. The Gemara says it's not so obvious. The Gemara says that, look, we have a halacha of toch tocho. The halacha of toch tocho is that if I have a double insulation of an item in an earthenware, in the interior earthenware airspace, so that is going to prevent the tumah from going to the earthenware, kli. To the outer earthenware, correct. So if I have a double insulation, so that means that it's in an earthenware, which is in another earthenware, that's toch tocho, and the outer one is going to be tahor. This is the chiddush over here is that your komate, your fold, is your base of starim, is not considered that second insulation, and it's viewed as if the sheretz is actually in the airspace of the earthenware kli. That's the chiddush. Amrish Lakish. Okay. We are in Mem Gimel Amud Aleph, more halachas regarding transmission of tumah. Just a short introduction before we start the halacha of Reish Lakish, and that is, let's talk a little bit about Hesed. Okay, Hesed is another form of transmission. We're talking today about unusual forms of transmission of tumah, right? The classics are Maga, Masa, and when it comes to the human remains, Ohel. There is, when it comes to Ezav, another form of transmission, and it's what's called Hesed. Hesed is, I caused it to move. So if a person is a Zav, and he didn't touch the item, he didn't physically touch the item, obviously that's Maga. He didn't carry the item, that would be Masa. But what he did is he just simply, with a stick, he just poked at it and he caused it to move. And this is what's called Hesed. And Hesed, as it relates to a Zav, is a transmission of Tumah, and the item now will become Tameh just through its causing of it being moved. I'm going to show you Rashi in just a moment from now. Rashi says that Hesed kind of is a subcategory of Masa, if we want to try to organize it and categorize it. So Rashi puts it categorically under the category of Masa. However, in other words, as much as it's under the category of Masa, this transmission doesn't work in other areas of Halacha. This transmission of Hesed is only limited to a Zav. Okay. So, with that stated, Amrish Lakish, Kana Bekumtosho Zavi Hisibo Satahor, Tahor. Kana bekum to shaltor v'hisibos hazav tamei. So now we're going to put together a lot of information that we learned, and we get to now synthesize a lot of information. The stick is being held right now in the armpit of the Zav. And with the stick now in the armpit of the Zav, so he's not holding it in his hand, he's holding the stick in his armpit, and he causes hasata on something which is, on a kli which is tahor. The kli that's tahor remains tahor. Let's go over the other side. Kana bekumtoshal tahor. If let's say the stick was held in the armpit of somebody who was tahor, and he was masit et azav, and he caused the zav to move. And the zav is a human being, but still. And he caused the zav to move. So now, the person who caused that movement is going to be tamei. Okay. Now let's see if we can wrap our heads around why the distinction between who's holding the stick. In other words, the situation is exactly the same in both scenarios. The stick is being held in an armpit, which means that the stick is being held in the base of starim. And the stick now is causing something else to be moved. So if that which is holding the stick is the Zav itself, so then he causes the Keli to move, the Keli remains Tahor. If, however, the stick is being held by somebody Tahor moving the Zav, so the person who caused the movement is going to be Tameh. My timer. So
the stick is completely enclosed?
No, the stick is just being held in the base of Starim.
Yeah, but I'm saying that
it's protruding. Yeah, it's protruding.
Protruding?
Yeah.
But it's considered completely enclosed? No.
No. What, in terms of the issues, we're going to get there. So my timer. The Pasuk says, I'm sorry, the Gemara explains. The reason is, the Pasuk says, V'chol asher yigabo hazav, that anything the Zav touches, V'yadav lo shataf b'mayim, and he didn't tov on the mikvah. Zehu seto shel zav. So this pasuk over here is referring to this special transmission of tuma of hesed, the hesed of a zav. Shalom atzina lo tuma b'chol Torah kula. This is unique. This does not exist in other forms of an avat tuma. It is only limited to a zav. V'afke rechman b'lasha negia. Now, as far as the drasha is concerned, this special transmission of tuma of hesed is extracted from a pasuk that uses the verb of maga. What does that tell us? Lamemer de hesed v'negia ki adav. So as far as hesed is concerned, it has to have the characteristics of your hands. Ma hasa me avrai, avhacha me avrai. So vis-a-vis your hands are an external area of your body. So too the hesed has to be created by an external area of your body. If the stick is being held by your base of starim, it's in your armpit, so although you caused movement, but the source of that the source of that force is from an interior area. It's not an exterior area. And as far as Hesed is concerned, so it has to have this characteristic where the movement is being caused by an external portion of your body, an exposed portion of your body. And that's why the stick being held in the armpit of the Zav that causes movement, so it's not going to be Metame. As we have now just finished these two halachas, so the Gemara really explained one side, not really the other side. So now let's just review and let's go over the other side. So if the Zav is holding a stick and causes the movement of a Kli, so even though we do have a special transmission of Tumah by a Zav called Hesed, and by causing it, an item to move, you will be Metame that item, the Zav will cause Tumah, but that's only if the movement is caused by an external area of your body, something like your hands. Could be a hand, could be a foot, could be a knee. In other words, it has to be an external area of the body. If, however, it's a stick that's held in the base of Starim, even though obviously the stick protrudes, but because the movement is being caused by the base of starim, so it's not going to be metame. And why? That's a drasha. Meaning since the source of hesed is coming from a pasuk that uses the word maga, and maga means touching with an external part of your body, so therefore hesed has to be with an external part of your body. Good. Now the other halacha that was quoted by Reish Lakish, so the Gemara doesn't really explain because the Gemara expects, oh, we understand that. If the stick is being held by a tahor, and it causes a zav to move, so now the tahor person is going to be tameh. Why should that be? So Rashi, bekumto shel tahor v'hisibo zav tameh. It's the third Rashi on the Amud. It's the third line on the Amud. Let's read the Rashi as it flows. Bekumto shel tahor v'hisibo zav tameh hatahor. So the tahor person comes tameh. Why? Sharei nasa zav, because that is considered like carrying of the zav. V'zav metame b'masa. And we know that a zav is metame b'masa. Meaning, if I were to lift a zav up, and again, a zav is a human being, so obviously it's not an easy thing to do. When we say lifting up the Zav, also could be included in that as just simply some supporting of its weight. So, dichsiv b'mishkav anoseh osam. So we know that if I were to lift a cushion of the Zav, so that person's Tameh, remember, the cushion of the Zav, special halacha of Mishkav, that tells us that the cushion is the same degree of Tumah as the Zav himself. So if I were to carry the cushion of a Zav, I become Tameh. That's a pasuk in the Torah. And Rashi says, kavachom l'zav atzmo. So by carrying the cushion of a Zav, I become Tameh. If I shoulder the weight of any part of the Zav himself, so I become Tameh. So the stick being held by the Torah person who is moving the Zav, now I understand moving and carrying are not exactly the same. I do understand that. But nevertheless, if you are moving the Zav, it's kind of like you're shouldering your burden, you're supporting some of its weight. It falls under the category of Masa, even though the stick is being held in the base of Starim. As we've now said numerous times this morning, the base of Starim, although impervious to Maga, is not impervious to Masa.
So that's actually what the
Dinis has. Yeah, but the way to view it, I mean, that's what Rashi's saying, but the way to view it is that it's really a form of Masa. Okay. Rashi, next couple of Rashis goes through the drushas in more detail. See Rashis for more details on the drushas. We're going to go on in the Gemara. Aval azava balkari eno eno matame v'chule zav dechsiv ki yazav mi besaro achi esay zovo mi besaro. The Gemara is going to just give us quickly the two drushas in terms of the halacha we learned back in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah we learned, this takes us back already to the beginning of the perek again, back on Daf Mem Amud Aleph. There are two halachas expressed in the Mishnah regarding when does a man become tameh when he has a discharge of either the zav discharge or the balkari discharge. And the drushas are, number one, for the Zav. I know I just read the pasuk. I'm going to reread it. Ki yazav mi besaro. The Torah says that the Zav is coming from his flesh. And the drush is, ad shi yetzei zova mi besaro. It's got to leave his flesh. Drusha number two, bal keri dechsiv ish ki seitzei mimene shech vazera. And again, the Torah describes it as a yitziyah. It has to be an exit. So that means that the man is not going to be tamei until the zera actually discharged from his body. So for a man, whether it be a Zav discharge or a Zera discharge, it has to exit his body. And again, that's the contrast to the woman. By the woman, she's going to be Tamea, even though the blood goes into the prose door and it hasn't actually exited her body. But that's the contrast between the men and the woman regarding Tuma, Zav versus Zava. And by Zav, we also include that, Balkari. We're going to have a good Chazara of a Gemara that we did some time ago, right? The 30 days ago in the Daf. A month ago. So remember the beginning of the second perek. So we talked about doing bedikas, right? The Mishnah in the beginning of the second perek told us that more bedikas is better for a woman. However, uva anashim tikatseks. The Mishnah uses a very strong language regarding a man should not be doing a bedika, even though he's doing a bedika to find out, to ascertain whether he's tameh, whether he's tahor. Nevertheless, no bedika by a man. It is totally unwarranted. And the Mishnah's language is even stronger than that. Tikat seitz. His hand should be cut off. Remember the Gemara's discussion there? The Mishnah meant it literally, figuratively. Anyway, a man should not be doing a bedika. Why? Shechva zera levatala. Because he may end up stimulating himself, and it'll lead to a waste of zera. And the beginning of the second parak discussed in detail the how strong an isser it is to be mostly shechva zera levatala. Okay? And meanwhile, that's the beginning of the second parak. In the beginning of the fifth parak, the Mishnah taught us that if a Kohen's eating truma and he feels now that he's about to have a discharge, so if he can suspend the discharge, so he should do so, even though it means he's going to be putting his hand on his ama, he should suspend the discharge, finish eating the truma, and then allow the discharge to occur. And so this discussion we had back in the beginning of the second parak, and Chazara here in the towards the beginning of the fifth parak. Okay, the Mishnah says he's going to hold his ama v'atayin. The Gemara says you can't do that. Rabbi Lazar Omer Kol Ochis Ba'ama Mashin Kilo Mavi Mabul Olam. So what we learned back in the beginning of the second parak, and that is if you're bringing a flood to the world, meaning the Dor HaMabul were destroyed as one of the reasons, right? The Torah talks about how they stole from one another, but as one of the reasons is because they were involved in Shechva Zer Levatala. So any person doing that is ke'ilu, you're bringing a mabul to the world. So Amar Abaye, so how do we resolve the Mishnah in the second parak and the Limudim in the second parak that tells us that this is wrong practice. And meanwhile, the Mishnah here in the beginning of the fifth parak says that under certain circumstances, you can do it. A person can hold on to his Amma. So the Gemara gives the answers again. This is all, we did all this back in the second parak. For us, this is review. Amar Abai Bemat Lesafa. So Abai's answer is, you're using a very thick cloth, and so therefore, it won't really stimulate the Amma. Rav Amar Filotemba Bemat Lesraka came into Akar Akar. Rav says, look, the person over here is already in the middle of having a discharge. So holding his Amma in this particular scenario will not increase the discharge. It's already happening. V'Abai Chayish Domasi La'asufei. Now, Abai says that's true, but if he holds on to Zama, so that will be further stimulation, and it will increase the amount of Zera that comes out. And Rav just simply disagrees. It sounds like they're having a machlokas in Metzius, and again, we know we like to try to stay away from that, but it sounds like they're debating whether or not during a discharge, during a stimulation, is more contact going to create more stimulation, and it sounds like they're arguing over this very point. That Tanya, the Gemara says, okay, but we do have a Braisa, meanwhile, the Braisa, again, we saw this Braisa also back in the second parak, describes that it's kind of like sticking your finger in the eye. As long as there's an obstruction, a finger in the eye, so it keeps tearing. And the Gemara says it's the same thing regarding the Eivor HaZachar. The Gemara says, Rava says, no, not b'shaita, meaning not while a person's having discharge. While a man's having a discharge, so it is going to be a set amount, and there's no further stimulation that's going to create any greater amount of discharge. Okay, and again, sounds like they're having a machlokas and mitzios. I'd rather not say that, but that's what it sounds like. Okay. Amar Shmuel. Three statements by Shmuel. The three statements subtly different than one another regarding the actual zera of a man. Statement number one, Amar Shmuel, Kol Shechva Zera She'ein Kol Gufo Margish Ba Ina Matame. In order for Shechva Zera to be Matame, it has to qualify Shechva Zera. What is the prerequisites? What's the qualifications of Shechva Zera? So there has to be a hargash in the entire man's body. So his entire body has to kind of react, respond, stimulate towards the discharge. Then and only then, the Zera qualifies as Zera. Which means that if there's just leaking, if you will, but the man's body did not really generate the stimulation, so then that doesn't qualify as Zera, and then it won't be, sounds like we're saying two things. It sounds like the Zera itself won't be Tamei, and it sounds like the person having the discharge also won't be Tamei. So my time is Shechva Zera Rechmana B'ru'u Yil Hazriel. So, and the reason why I say Shmuel this is so, is because the Zera definitionally has to be something which would inseminate a woman. And if it kind of just leaks out, but it doesn't come out with full force, so it wouldn't inseminate a woman, and therefore doesn't qualify as zera regarding Tumat Tahara. There's more than, yes, your point's excellent. The Gemara earlier was making distinctions between Zav and Balkari. And right, there's...
But they said that there's a difference.
Correct. One of the differences the Gemara points out is whether it comes out in force or whether it comes out... Actually, to be a little more accurate, the Gemara described it in terms of whether it comes out from the man which is Chai, versus the man is bikoshi, or the man is just in a non-erect state.
Is it a venereal disease?
It's a fair question. I don't know. Okay. So the my time is shechva zera machmana beruuya lahazria. So it has to be ruuya lahazria. Meisve the Gemara says a challenge Shmuel based on the following brisa. Hayamahar b'layla v'amino masa b'saru cham tame. The Mishnah in Mikvos. Now, the Mishnah Mikvos is primarily interested in discussing what mikvahs work, what mikvahs don't work. But one of the Mishnayos over there in the 8th Perek also describes that a person's Mahara Balaila, he has a nocturnal emission, and the only real evidence that he has is that when he wakes up, Bisaro Cham, he has a warm and stimulated body, so that person's Tamei, meaning we assume that he had a discharge. So the Gemara is bothered by the following. Shmuel says, he has to have a hargash b'chol gufo, right? His entire body has to feel the discharge. Over here, if he's having it asleep, did he really feel it? Now, it's kind of an unfair question because he wasn't conscious at that point in time. The Gemara's assumption is that he wouldn't remain in an unconscious state. He wouldn't remain asleep. So the Gemara says, Tirgama revhunam b'misham shmitasa b'chalamo. So, interesting answer of the Gemara. The Gemara says that he was actually sleeping, he was actually dreaming of having relations. So the hargasha that he had in his dreams was actually a reflection of the actual hargasha that he had. The yeshal shamish below hargasha. Okay, that's the that would be in defense of Shmuel's first statement. So again, in Shmuel's statement number one, a zera only has the status of zera, and presumably we're saying the same thing about the person who's having the discharge. The zera only has the status of a zera if it comes out with a hargashas kol gufo. Statement number two of Shmuel, lishna achrina. Now this is another version, so it's going to sound a little bit different. Amr Shmuel kol shifra zera sheina yorek echeitz ena matame. So with the force of the discharge, Shmuel says that it has to shoot out like an arrow, and if it does not shoot out like an arrow, it's not going to be matame. Ma'ika bein ha'lishna la'ilishna. Now the second version of Shmuel is not the same, not exactly the same as the first lashon of Shmuel. Ika beinau nekara behargasha v'yatsa shelo behargasha. So his bodily sensation felt the discharge, but when the actual discharge came out, so it didn't shoot out. So milsa depshit. And that would be the difference between version number one, version number two. In version number one, so Shmuel says, what is the definition? What is the criteria of zera that's tameh? So you need hargashas kol guf. If you have that over here, so then that zera is tameh, even though it didn't shoot out kechetz. According to version number two, no, that's not enough. That's insufficient. You need a hargashas kol gufo, and you need the zera to shoot out. So if you have a scenario where the person felt the hargasha, but the actual zera didn't shoot out, so according to version number one, the zera is tameh. According to version number two, the zera is not tameh. Milsa de pshita le shmo mi bai le rava de bai rava, nekra bargash v'yasa shlo bargasha mahu. So the Gemara says now, in version number two, Shmuel said this as a davar pashut. Meanwhile, even within version number two, Rava asked the question, and Rava was unsure of the answer. Rava asked, what if, let's say, what if the Zera came with a full Hargasha, but when it actually came out, so it didn't come out with force. So Tashma, the Gemara quotes a Mishnah, another Mishnah in Mikvaos, also eighth perek, Balkeri shetava v'lo hitzel mayim l'chishiyata mayim tameh. That let's say you have a Balkeri. So he needs to tovel in the mikveh. He does so. But between his keri discharge and him toveling in the mikveh, he didn't urinate. Meaning he should have, but he didn't. And the reason why he should have, we're going to explain in just a moment. And now he tovels in the mikveh and then he urinates. So he's going to be tameh. Why? What's the concern? The concern is that when he had a discharge, so some of the zera, not all the zera came out. Some of the zera remained at the tip of his aver. And so then when he urinates, so that's going to push the zera out of his body. And as it pushes, it's outside of his body. It's making contact with the exterior of his body as it's exiting. And so therefore, he's going to be tummy. Okay, so which means then that what he should do is he should urinate before going to the mikvah. Anyway, so what does that clearly indicate? So that clearly indicates now that you don't need it to come out kechetz. It doesn't have to shoot out with force, because over here it didn't. And yet the person's tummy. The Gemara says this is not a raya. It's not a proof. Shani Hasam deruba bargasha nafak. Shani Hasam deruba bargasha nafak. No. And I'll tell you why it's not a proof. Because this discharge qualified as a tame discharge, meaning it came out with force originally. Either some remaining inside of his aver, okay, but that remainder of his aver came from a discharge that came out with full force. So the reason why that's going to be matamim as it exits when he urinates is because it was part of a discharge that came out with full force. So it's not a proof. The Mishnah Mikvaos does not necessarily conclude one way or another. Lishna achrina amr le amr Shmuel. And now one more version of Shmuel. So far, version number one of Shmuel, zer is metame when you have argashas kol gufo. Version number two of Shmuel, the zer is going to be metame when it leaves kechetz, when it's yorek kechetz. And now version number three of Shmuel, so amr le amr Shmuel kol shifra zer sheina yorek kechetz enu mazras. Now in version number three, he's talking about not tumah tahara, he's talking about what kind of zer is going to impregnate a woman, as a shootout like an arrow. Now, in version number three, it sounds like that the only thing you need in terms of the full force discharge where it shoots like an arrow is insemination. But what Shmuel seems to be implying is that regarding tumah, even if it doesn't come out with a shooting arrow force, it's going to be metame. Which, quite frankly, that's That's really version number one of Shmuel. But it's just another way to say it. Shenemar ki yebach isha sher lo yeh tahor mikre. Afilu keri ba'olam. Even if it's just keri ba'olam and it doesn't shoot out with full force, it is going to be tame. That is version number three of Shmuel, which does seem to be a... I'm not sure if there's a difference between the first version of Shmuel and the third version of Shmuel. Okay. Abai Rava. So, within all this discussion of what qualifies a zera, so we're going to see three questions of Rava. By Rava. Ovikocham shehira v'yared v'tava. Maho. Let's say you have a guy who is about to go into the mikvah, and before going into the mikvah, he had a hirurim, and he definitely feels that he's going to have a discharge, but he didn't actually have the discharge yet. He told us in the mikvah, he comes out of the mikvah, so now, the zera that comes out of him, is it going to be tame or is it not going to be tame? What's the issue? So Rashi reminds us of a halacha that we learned in the previous parak. In the fourth parak, what do we say regarding the zav discharge of a guy? It's tame midrabanan. What about a bal keri discharge of a guy? It's not tame at all. Remember, the chachamim wanted to create more forms of separation, division between Jew and non-Jew. And so one way to do so is to make a gzera derabanan regarding the tumah of a the tumah zav of a guy, but not by the bal keri. So to say it in more succinct terms, the keri that comes out of a non-Jew is tahor. Now he had.
If that guy with the zav midrabanan goes tahor, it becomes
tahor. Hold on, right now we're talking about the bal keri.
Why is he tahor? Doesn't do anything to him.
He wants the tovel to become a Jew.
Conversion.
So what happens now is as follows. So he has a hargasha of the zav coming out while he's a guy. He then told us, I know the case is unusual. It's just to make the point of when the tumah comes about. So he has a hargasha of the keri leaving while he's a guy. He told us in the mikvah. He then comes out of the mikvah and then it discharges. So what becomes the critical factor of tumah regarding the zera? It's really just another version of what creates the tumah by the zera. Is it the hargasha, the sensation of it coming out, or it actually coming out? Right? And really goes back to the two versions of Shmuel. Meaning, you need the hargasha's kol guf, that's version number one, or do you need to shoot out kechets? That's version number two of Shmuel. And it's this question of Rava is basically just another way of formulating this idea. So I'm going to read it again. By Rava, v'kocham shehira v'yavet taval. So he had a hargasha before telling the mikvah to convert. Then he goes into the mikvah. Then he converts. And then, discharge. So ma'o imtim salam rabasa akiras linan hanimila l'chomra avahacha de l'kula lo amrina. Now, if we're saying that the hargasha is the critical part, so when did the hargasha occur? Before he converted, while he was a non-Jew. And again, the bal keri of a non-Jew is tahor. But on the other hand, in this scenario, that would result in a kula. That would then dictate that this keri that's coming out, even though it came out after he converted, is going to be keri that's tahor. That would be a kula. And maybe I wouldn't go that far. Or maybe I would go that far. And I would say that over here, teku the gemara leaves question number one of Rava unresolved. Question number two of Rava, by Rava. Zava shenekro mei ragleha v'yard v'tavla. So you have a woman who is a zava, and she feels the sensation of urination coming. And we know that the urine of a zava is mayanos. We know that the mayan of a zava is tamei. However, it didn't actually come out of her. She told them the mikvah. So, and now she comes out and then she actually urinates. So, imtim salam basa kiras linan hani mila shechva zera de la masinakele, ava me me ragla de masinakele. So the Gemara says, so again, over here now, it's the same question, but obviously we're not talking about the shechva zera of a man. We're talking about the urination of a woman. And so now, if we're saying that the akira is critical, but over here, maybe not here, because we're talking about urination. And urination. So we have bodily control when it comes to urination. So you can stop it from coming out. Mm-hmm. So maybe the hargasha, the sensation of needing to urinate, is not critical. Maybe that's not the case. Maybe there would be no difference. Maybe just like we say regarding the shechva zera, akira becomes a critical component of establishing its time of tumah. So maybe the same thing is going to be true regarding urination. Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Third question of Rava, by Rava. So here we have a non-Jewish woman who's a Zava. And again, with the sensation of needing to urinate, and then the yard of Vitavla Mahu. And then she tovels in the mikvah, and coming out of the mikvah, then she urinates. So now it's the same question. Just the only feature over here is that when she needed the eshiyah, the sensation to urinate, she was a goya. And we know that the zava discharge, the urine discharge that comes out of a nachriya is tamei midrabanan. So over here, so what are we going to say? Are we going to follow the akira? Are we going to follow the time that it actually emerged? And it really is now comes down to the same question. So when we talked about the controlling of your urine, being able to stop it, so maybe that's as far as a Jewish woman, that was our previous question, that was the Tumah Daraisa. But when it comes to a non-Jewish woman, where her Tumah to begin with is only a Tumah Darabana, maybe not. The Gemara says, or maybe again, it'd be no different, Teku. And in question number three, the question is also left unresolved.
We have a concept of Gushni's Garak Katan Nolajan. Why do we ever connect pre and post Tvila?
Right. So the only reason why we would connect it is because if the Akira is significant, which the Gemara, you know, seems to favor, if the Akira is significant, so then the even though the Zera emerged after she tovled in the mikvah, after he tovled in the mikvah, and I would normally say that that's a source of tumah, but because the akira occurred before, so then you would then you'd bring it back to the pre-tvila.
The akira occurred to someone else.
Akira itself is not the tumah.
That's true. In other words, it's like a whole it's a whole different person. Let me think more about it. Okay, I'm not sure. Umetamim b'chol shehein. Okay, now how much zera needs to come out? So once again, we're almost done with the Mishnah, right? The Mishnah, the beginning of the Perek. So the last point talked about, so what is the shear? How much needs to come out? So the Mishnah, all the way back in the beginning of the fifth Perek on Daf Mem, so talked first about Yotzi Dofen, then talked about a woman versus a man regarding when they become Tameh with the discharge. By a woman, it's based on Chitzon. By a man, it actually has to exit the body. And then the third point is the amount. How much needs to come out? So the Mishnah at the end says, Matamim b'choshu. Afilu ke'ena chardal v'pachus mikan. Any amount of discharge. The Gemara now is just going to see clarification in terms of where these halachas come from. Where the drushas. So, umitamin b'choshehin. Amr shmol zav tzarech kechachzim as pi'ama shenemar o'echtim b'sarom mizaval. So, we start off with a statement of Shmuel. For a Zav to have a discharge, that's going to be Matami the Zav, there has to be an amount. The amount is the amount of Zav that would cover the entire opening of the urethra. The Pasuk says, O'echtim bisaro mizavo. It has to actually block up the, or seal his body. Meaning the orifice of the opening. The Gemara says, Shmuel, what are you saying? In other words, what about our Mishnah? V'anan tanan mitamen b'chol shehein. The Mishnah says there isn't a shear. So who damek Rabbi Nasan? So the Gemara says, okay, Shmuel doesn't agree with the Mishnah, but he's supported by another Braisa. D'tanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa, Rabbi Nasan Omer, Mishum Rabbi Shmuel, Zav, Tzarek kechasim espi ama, v'lo hodu lo. So the Rabbi Nasan quotes, in the name of Rabbi Shmuel, that there is a shear. And the Chachamim said, no, there's no shear. So it's a machlokas tanayim. And Shmuel is just adopting the position of Rabbi Nasan and Rabbi Shmuel. So my time into Rabbi Shmuel, damakro echtim besara mizavo. So what's the basis of Rabbi Shmuel? We already know the answer. Shmuel told us. But the Gemara now is going to go in its classic back and forth. So the source of Rabbi Shmuel is the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, o echtim besara mizavo. V'rabbanu mi baile lach metame veina metame yavish. Now the Chachamim say, you're right, that's the Pasuk. And you're right, there is a drasha. But that's not what we learn from that pasuk. What we learn is that the zav is matami only when it comes out in liquid form, non-solid form. Rabbi Shmuel, hahu mirar nafka. Rabbi Shmuel agrees, but learns that from a different pasuk, notably the pasuk of rar. Rar means that it is a flow coming out of him, in other words, liquid form. V'rabbanan, hahu liminyanahu da'asa. Now the Chachamim say, yes, there is a drasha to be made from the word rar. But that is regarding the number of discharges a man has to have. Zovo chada, rar bisaro tre, es zovo tlas. So you read the pasuk and you break it up in the manner we just did, and it comes out to three discharges. Limid al zav bal shalosh riyos shechayev b'karban. And when a zav has three consecutive discharges, he has to bring a karban after counting shiv nekiyim. O echtim b'saro mizavo tamei, mikza zavo tamei, limid al zav bal shtei riyos shematamei mishkav amoshav. Now, as far as the continuation of the pasuk, where the Torah now describes that he is going to be tamei when he has a discharge, that means even if it's not three, even if it's less than three. So one less than three is two. Thank you. And so that means that when he has a zav discharge of two, so then he's going to be metamei mishka v'moshav. He sits on an item, the item is going to be tamei the same degree he is tamei. Now, this is how the chachamim address the pasuk of Rar. It comes to talk about the amount of discharges he needs. It's Rabbi Shmuel minyan manale. Now Rabbi Shmuel agrees that you need a minyan. What does he learn it from? Nafkalei mid Rabbi Simai. So he learns it from a different source, notably Rabbi Simai. The Tanya, the Gemara quotes the Brisa. Rabbi Simai Omer mana kasav shtaim v'karutame shalosh v'karutame. You read through the psukim 2, 3. We saw this in the beginning of Masechta Megillah. So haketsa shtaim l'tumah v'shalosh karban. So to make him a bona fide zav in which he's going to have the full tumah status of a zav. He sits on an item. The item becomes tumah like he does. He needs to count shiv nekiyim. So that is after two discharges. So what is introduced with the third discharge? The requirement to bring a karban after counting shiv nekiyim. So that comes out from the psukim. The Gemara doesn't even quote the psukim. Ulaman de nafkele tarvai mizostia tumas bezovo. Ish kia zav mi besara mai avile. So if you're learning it out from zostia tumas bezovo, what do you do with the pasuk of so it's to teach me the halacha that the zav is only tame when the ziva actually exits his body. Zovo tame lamale. What do you do with the extra words of zovo tame? So limed al zav shu tame. I'm sorry, limed al zov shu tame. Not only is the man who experiences his discharge going to be tame, he will be a zav, but the actual discharge itself also is going to be an avatama, and that's what we learn out from the pasuk of zovo tame. Okay, this is a good time to stop, good place to stop. I'm Rav Chaim Elias, where we're going to pick it up tomorrow. Okay, let's recap our morning. Today we went over the halachas of Beis Hastarim versus Balua, a continuation of yesterday's daf. The difference is that Balua is totally absorbed and totally insulated, making the item impervious to both Maga, Tumas Maga and Tumas Masa. Beis Hastarim, however, is only going to be impervious to Maga, not to Masa. And we saw applications of that regarding a woman and a Pruzdor, regarding a woman and a man in terms of the throat. That's a Beis Hastarim area. It's debatable, but Rava says that's a Beis Hastarim area, not a Balua area. Something like a uterus, that is a Balua area. What about an armpit? That's clearly a Beis Hastarim area. That's unequivocal. And then we went through various applications of this halacha, knowing what is a Beis Hastarim versus an external area. We talked about it regarding Zav. We talked about it regarding Tumas Heset. That was the beginning of this morning. A man is only tamei when the Zav and the Balkari actually exit his body. The Gemara quoted Psukim to teach us both of those halachas. And then a Zera going to be metamei a man. When? So there are three different ways that Shmuel articulated this point. According to Shmuel number one, you need a hargashas kol gufo. According to Shmuel number two, the Zera has to shoot out kechetz. It's yor kechetz. Shoots out like an arrow. According to version number three, does not have to shoot out like an arrow. And as I pointed out, version number three sounds a lot like version number one of Shmuel. And there may be a subtle difference, I don't know. The Gemara then went through three different questions of Rava regarding the sensation of the discharge emerging versus when it actually emerges. And what is the critical point regarding Tumah? And so he asked this question three different ways regarding a man with a Balkari discharge who's converting, regarding a woman who has a Zava and has a sensation of urinating, regarding a non-Jewish woman who is going to convert with that sensation of urinating before going to the mikvah and actually urinating afterwards. Okay. And then we finished off today with Shmuel's statement that the Zav having a discharge needs a shear. That goes against our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says there is no shear, it's a kol shu. And so Shmuel's position is following a different brisa, notably Rabbi Nassan, Rabbi Shmuel. And then the Gemara went through its classic back and forth in terms of where our Mishnah arrives at this conclusion versus where Rabbi Shmuel arrives at his conclusion.